Welcome to Students Incorporated. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. Hello and welcome back to the show. In our first segment, my team and I will be asking and answering some questions about financial literacy and other money-related topics. Then, in segment two, we'll continue part two of our adventure story titled Legends of the Yucatan. And if you missed part one of our story, go back and listen to episode 87. This episode is sponsored by the Sports Medicine Club, which provides events, knowledge, and engaging experiences that unite those who are interested in the topic of sports medicine and sports, and are looking to improve their performance and stay active and healthy. Members of the club help with the annual Red Cross blood donation drive, as well as participate in and host other related events in the form of seminars or job shadowing. So thank you to Toya and all the club participants for helping to sponsor this episode. Now let's hear our quote of the day and get some headline news.
Our quote of the day comes from Anna Maria Lusati, an Italian economist. Financial literacy is not an end in itself, but a tool to achieve financial well-being and security. Financial literacy isn't just about knowing about money and its term. It's about using that knowledge to build a secure and stable life. It's not enough to just understand how budgets, savings, or investments work. The real goal is to put that knowledge into use so you can make smart financial decisions. You want to avoid money stress and create a better future for yourself. In other words, learning about money isn't the finish line. It's the tool that helps you get to where you want to go. And that's our quote of the day. Now on to some headline news with Mia.
Thank you for our quote of the day. For our news today, we're bringing you three financial news stories from around the globe. Our first story is from the EU. According to Reuters, the euro surged to a five-month high following Ukraine's agreement to a 30-day ceasefire proposal, potentially restoring US military aid and intelligence sharing. This development positively impacted European equity futures, with the price of the euro reaching 1.0947 USD in New York trade before stabilizing at 1.0913 USD. Russia has yet to respond to the proposal. Next up is from the United States. According to FT.com, U.S. stock markets experienced a significant downturn, with the S&P 500 falling 2.7% and the Nasdaq Composite plummeting 4%, marking its worst day in 2.5 years. Technology stocks, including Tesla, which dropped 15.4%, and Nvidia, down 5.1%, were among the hardest hit. This sell-off, attributed to concerns about the U.S. economy and President Trump's trade policy, also affected financial services companies like Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. Finally, according to USnews.com, Thailand's economy is expected to grow 3.0% this year, led by increased tourism, exports, and private consumption, according to the finance ministry. Exports, a key driver of growth, are projected to rise 4.4% this year, up from an earlier forecast of 3.1%. The government is also planning soft loans worth 55 billion baht, or 1.6 billion USD, to support the housing market. And that ends our headline news for this episode.
Thank you for the quote and the headline news. Maddie and C have joined us in the studio today to talk about this first topic for segment one, financial literacy. It's a big deal, but let's break it down in a way that actually makes sense, especially for the average non-finance person out there. All right, Mia, we'll get us started with our first question.
All right, let's start with something fun. Our first question is, what does retirement look like to you? Are you chilling in a beach house somewhere, or are you still working but on your own terms?
I think I still want to work a bit, maybe consulting or teaching part-time. Having more control over my time sounds great, though.
Yeah, I don't know about a beach house, but I love to have more time for hobbies. Just doing what I actually enjoy without financial stress.
Interesting perspective, but here's something to think about. According to a 2023 survey put out by the Employee Benefit Research Institute, only 27% of retirees feel very confident that they have enough money to live comfortably throughout retirement. That's a drop from 33% in 2022. So planning early really matters.
And that's why financial literacy is so important. So let's test our knowledge with some financial literacy trivia. All right, first question for all of us is, what does the term compound interest mean?
A simpler way to explain compound interest, it's interest on interest. The longer you let it grow, the more powerful it becomes.
All right, and our second financial trivia question is this. Which is considered the safer option for long-term growth, stocks or bonds, and why?
And according to my research, while stocks can deliver higher returns, bonds offer stability. It really depends on your risk tolerance.
Now, let's talk about diversifications now. If someone's just starting the investment journey, how would you explain it?
I see it as making sure you don't rely on just one thing. If one investment fails, others can help balance out the loss. Diversification is when you spread your money across different types of investments so as to reduce risk.
Exactly. It's like not putting all your eggs in one basket. Spread your money across different investments to reduce risk.
All right, moving on to stocks. We've all heard buy low, sell high, but is timing the market really the best strategy?
Honestly, trying to time the market is a bad idea. It's more about consistency, investing regularly rather than trying to guess when prices will rise or fall.
Research shows that long-term investing beats market timing. That's why strategies like dollar cost averaging, investing a fixed amount consistently, works well over time.
Exactly. According to Jeremy Siegel's research in stocks for the long run, stocks have historically returned about 6.5 to 7% per year after inflation over the past 200 years. That's why I'm staying in the game long-term really matters.
Now let's shift gears to crypto. It's a hot topic, but also super volatile. Do you think it'll become a staple in retirement portfolios?
I see crypto having a place, but it's too unpredictable for long-term stability. I wouldn't bet my retirement on it, but if you have extra money you don't mind investing, then try a little here and there to get a better understanding about it.
Yeah, I haven't done deep research, but from what I know, it's risky. That said, what I've read is that governments are exploring how to use it and regulate it, so it's not going away anytime soon.
Speaking of wealth, have you heard of the three generations curse? It's the idea that family wealth often disappears by the third generation. So, why do you think that happens?
I've heard that it's usually because the third generation hasn't learned how to manage it. They inherit wealth, but not the financial skills and mindset on how to maintain and preserve it.
Yeah, I honestly think that the problem is that the third generation didn't have to work it. They all take it for granted. Without a plan to teach them how to manage it, it can easily slip away.
Yeah, those are all really good points. And now let's talk more about like financial scams, especially with online banking. So we know that scams are everywhere. And what do you guys think are some red flags people should look out for?
Scammers often pretend to be from banks or a government agency. That's a big red flag. Anyone asking for sensitive info over the phone or messaging apps like WhatsApp or Instagram, they may ask for sensitive information or money up front. Don't fall for it. And they tend to prey on the elderly and others who may be more naive to their tactics.
The stats are scary too. Research on fraud in the US was a bit easier to find than global fraud. Anyways, here's what we found out. Research suggested that Americans lost around $12.5 billion to fraud in 2024, a 25% increase from the previous year of 2023. Also, investment scams were at $5.7 billion and imposter scam were at $2.9 billion. These stats were put out by the U.S. Consumer Fraud Statistics Agency. Now, on a global scale, the estimate is a little bit less clear, but what we could find and what was actually reported was that globally, for the year 2023, financial fraud was around $485.6 billion. The stats came from the 2024 Global Financial Crime Report. And according to the Federal Trade Commission 2020 report, consumers reported losing over $8.8 billion to fraud, with investment scams being the second most common type of fraud after imposter scams. These numbers are crazy, right?
And that's why it's really crucial to be smart with money. And speaking of that, how can families avoid financial pitfalls when passing down wealth?
I think one of the best options is to get professional advice. For example, like lawyers, financial planners, and tax advisors can help in different ways, making sure that wealth can be passed down to the next generation smoothly. Getting professional advice usually comes with a fee, so make sure you do your homework and check the references of the professionals.
Yeah, that's a good advice. And beyond that, having open conversations about money and families is important. If younger generations aren't educated about financial responsibility, even the best planning can fall apart. So learning about money and how to handle and manage it is a very important thing for kids to learn. The earlier, the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was a great discussion. And especially for young people to be thinking this way, even if they don't have a full-time job, is to be thinking about how can they be managing money, and in the future, once they get a job and have a steady income coming in, the idea of how to manage it and take care of it and just be wise with it, because it is a resource we can use. All right, we covered a lot, from retirement dreams to smart investing, crypto risk, and even financial scams. What are the key takeaways? Well, financial literacy is all about planning ahead, making informed choices, and protecting your money. Whether it's understanding compound interest, diversifying investments, or avoiding the scams, the more you know, the better prepared you'll be. The earlier you start learning about this is better. So thank you guys for joining us for this segment one. All right, stay tuned for segment two, as we'll be right back after this short PSA.
An upcoming ICS event you may be interested in is the annual second semester theater play, performed and produced by Theater 1, 2, 3, and 4 students. This year, they will be performing William Shakespeare's well-known Midsummer's Night Dream. The play is scheduled for 2 days on Thursday, April 3rd, and Friday, April 4th, at two time slots per day, which are 3:30 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. If you are on the email list from the school, you will find a link on how to purchase tickets for this event. Come out and support our theater students as they travel back to Athenian Greece for a tale of love triangles, magic, and mischief. Hope to see you there.
And we are back with our second segment, and we will continue with part two of our story, Legends of the Yucatan. Part two is titled The Interviews. If you missed part one, The Proposal, you can get caught up by listening to episode 87. Legends of the Yucatan is a sequel to our season two story, The Secrets of El Dorado, which is available in audio narration in episodes 55 through 64. It's also available in book form as a downloadable PDF or in paperback version on Amazon.com. Just visit studentsincorporated.com to find out more. Now, moving on, Camden will give us a quick recap before we jump into part two.
Recapping part one, The Proposal. Our unlikely heroes receive an invitation to attend the unveiling of two rare artifacts in Mexico City. We meet Amanda Chase, a new professor at El Dorado College, and leave off with Professor Hawthorne and his students going on holiday break. And without further ado, let's jump back into our story, where we join the eclectic group of characters in their continuing adventure.
It's early May, and UNAM is bustling with activities, and the temps in Mexico City are already starting to rise with the summer's months approaching. The end of the second semester is always quite hectic. With graduation approaching, Professor Thomas Flores, or as his student call him, Prof. Tommy, had just returned from grabbing a quick bite to eat from one of the food vendors near his campus building. He was running late for lunch and couldn't get his usual carne asada torta, the famous Mexican version of a loaded meat sandwich. More on that later. Prof. Tommy's morning classes and meetings had interrupted his weekly Friday lunch routine, and he wasn't too happy about it either. He ended up grabbing two tamales and a bottle of Coke, and then headed right back to his small office in preparation for his video call at 1 p.m. Prof. Thomas Flores sits down in his squeaky desk chair with one tamale in hand and taps the keyboard and mouse to open his video calling app, finds his old friend's contact number, and clicks the call now button.
Professor Hawthorne's computer starts ringing with a ringtone, sounding like one of those old-time phones from the 1940s. He set the ringtone on his video app several years ago and has never changed it. He actually can't remember how to change it. Hawthorne clicks the green accept button on his screen and is immediately met with an image of Tommy Flores taking a big bite out of what looks like a tamale. "Hey, buddy," says Hawthorne, "looks like you're having a busy day. If my memory serves me right, I don't remember you ever working through your lunch break back in the day.
Ah, yes, well, there's a time for everything. Tommy responds with a mouthful of food. He puts his tamale down, takes a swig of Coke, and then says, I'm just confirming your flight details. I wanted to relay some logistical information so you know what to expect when you arrive. One of our drivers and myself will pick your group up at the airport. We're waiting for you after your exit baggage claim, and I'll be holding a sign with your name on it and the UNAM logo. And we'll be taking you directly to our accommodations so you can get settled, and then we can meet again sometime late afternoon. Tommy continues, oh, by the way, my department head was pleased to hear that Ava Turner and Lily Han was also coming. I know this is a busy time for you all, but what is happening here is a pretty big deal, and it'll be an honor to have you all here for it.
Hawthorne replies, oh, thanks, Tommy. Everything is a go on our end, and if all goes as planned, we'll be talking in person tomorrow afternoon at the hotel. Mrs. Hawthorne says hi and sends her greetings. She can't make the trip with me, but wanted me to remind you of the time in Puerto Vallarta when you almost got duped into wrestling that guy's pet alligator. Remember that?
Wow, there's one memory I've tried to forget, but thanks for reminding me. Tommy responds with a quirky smile. He continues, I've got to go, but one last thing you might want to remind your students who are coming. Make sure they bring some work-type clothes, as we'll be going to the field with one of our teams. I'm sure they'll be happy to know they won't be sitting around on the university campus the entire time they're here. Okay, I've got to finish my lunch quickly and then head to my next class. Take care, and I'll see you later tomorrow. And with that last statement, Tommy ends the call and rushes off to his next class.
Hey, boss, Amanda says this as she knocks softly on the open door to Hawthorne's office. She continues, I've got to admit, I'm a bit jealous. I'm not going with you guys. Are you all ready for the big trip?
Hawthorne looks up from his chair with a slight smile on his face. Yeah, I think we're ready. I mean, I guess we'll find out tomorrow as we get on the airplane. Wow, the last few months since our official invite have flown by. I can't believe the trip is already here. I hope everybody remembers everything. You've done a great job of helping me get all the details figured out on this end, so thank you so much. The professor gets up from his chair and starts walking toward the door. And thanks for holding down the fort while we're away. I know this department will be in good hands. Do you want to grab a quick lunch and review any last-minute details? It's my treat, and I'm heading to Ethan's Cafe.
Amanda responds, sure, especially if you're buying. If we leave now, we can beat the lunch crowd.
All right, sounds good. I'm parked out front. We can start a conversation on the way there. The professor replies as they both make their way out of the building toward the parking lot.
The following day, the bus ride to Sacramento Airport was lively and loud. Professor Hawthorne, Ava, and Lily were all sitting together toward the front and talking about some of the first day agendas. There were 7 college students who were going on the trip as well. Most of the noise and excitement was coming from them. The college students were at part of one of Hawthorne's spring semester classes called Archaeology of the Americas, which covered North, Central, and South America. These students were all 3rd and 4th year students in the broader archaeological undergraduate degree program. The class included 7 students, 3 guys, and 4 girls. The students were not only going to receive 3 credits from taking this class, but they were also going to receive 1 extra college credit for being part of this trip. Needless to say, they all felt like they were in the right class at the right time. El Dorado College approved the trip back in February, about 2 months after UNAM Rep. Tommy Flores made the official invitation ahead of the holiday break. The college admin were more than happy to send the group of 9, Hawthorne, Lily, the class TA, and 7 undergraduate students. The college admin also approved Ava Turner to help as an official chaperone of the group. Ava's popularity as a reputable journalist had grown over the last 2 years, so having her along on the trip meant good PR for the college.
Ava grabs Lily's hand and squeezes tight as the plane makes its landing at Mexico City International Airport, Benito Juarez, or better known by its 3-letter handle, MEX. Ava looks at Lily and says, "No matter how much I travel, I never get used to the landing part of the flight. That's just something about it that makes me nervous."
Lily smiles and squeezes her hand back and says, "Yeah, sometimes it gets to me as well, especially if the weather seems a little unpredictable. Or maybe it's just the fact that we're not in control."
Eva responds back, "Yeah, that and my fear of heights, I'm sure, contribute to my nervousness." Eva changes the subject while the plane is taxiing to one of the arrival gates. "I hope all our luggage shows up."
Hawthorne, who is seated in the row behind them, responds with, "Yeah, I hope so. Otherwise, our book signing event might be quite boring." As the plane door opens and the flight attendant gives the all clear to exit the plane, Hawthorne looks around to make sure all the students he and Lily are responsible for have gotten their carry-ons and are ready to go. He nods his head and makes eye contact with each student, making sure they are ready and paying attention, then turns around and exits the plane following Eva and Lily, who are in front of him.
Less than 15 minutes later, the group of 10 were waiting at baggage carousel number 6, praying and hoping that all their luggage made the trip safe and sound. Of course, this wasn't like the old days where airlines would often lose luggage. I think the only one who was actually a bit nervous was Professor Hawthorne. You see, over 20 years ago in this very airport, before it was renovated, he and one of his dig teams stood in this very same baggage area and waited for over 3 hours for their equipment to show up. And when it finally did, several important cases were missing. He had filed a complaint to the airport authorities and airline to no avail. The two cases were never recovered and the tools and equipment lost hampered their dig project at the time. But that memory soon left as Hawthorne watched all their luggage get deposited down the chute and into the spinning baggage carousel.
Luggage in hand, Lily turns toward the professor and says, "Looks like all our luggage is here. We're ready to go when you are."
"Great," the professor responds. "Follow me out and ignore the taxi drivers alongside the curb. We're looking for my friend, Professor Tommy, who should be holding a sign labeled El Dorado College Group."
Eva is one of the first ones out of the airport exit doors and sees Professor Tommy holding the sign a few meters away. "Hey guys, he's over there." She turns around and says to the group behind her.
Professor Tommy notices the larger group of young people walking towards him and then sees Hawthorne. He waves his hand, then moves to greet them. After a few introductions and pleasantries, Prof. Tommy directs the group towards a larger white van, courtesy of UNAM, which comes with a driver as well. The group loads their luggage and gets situated into the van. As the van leaves the airport, Prof. Tommy turns around in his seat and says, "Hola, and welcome to Mexico City. It's great to have you all here, and I hope this trip will be the highlight of your semester."
While Lily and the group of students get settled into their different visitor dormitory rooms, Eva and the professor meet with Professor Tommy to talk about the upcoming events and schedule. Hawthorne is scheduled to give 2 lectures the following day, while the college students and Lily are given a tour of some of the campus. Eva received permission to meet and interview several college professors, Professor Tommy being one of them, the museum's head curator, Anthony Garcia, and 2 individuals who helped discover the artifacts that would be handed over to the museum at the gala event in just a few days.
"Tommy, thank you for your warm welcome. The accommodations are perfect for our group and the schedule looks good. So after my lecture tomorrow, Eva, Lily, and I will be in the main student center signing books and talking with students, right?"
Prof. Tommy responds, "Yeah, that's correct. You'll be accompanied by a few of my students, and your students are free to mingle, hang out, and enjoy getting to know some of our UNAM students and staff. Plus, there's plenty of food and snacks options in the student center." Tommy goes on, "Eva, do you have any questions?"
"No, this looks all good. I can go with the flow, and I look forward to talking with Mr. Garcia, Ms. Martinez, and Mr. Silva. Did I get their names right?"
"That's correct," Tommy replies. "Okay, I've got to run. Text or call me if you need anything else in the meantime. Otherwise, I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks again, James, for accepting my invite. It's really good to see you again. And Miss Turner, it's nice to meet you all, as it seems you've made quite the name for yourself over the last 2 years." And with that, Professor Tommy shuffles off and out of the small dormitory sitting room.
Hawthorne and Eva watch as Prof. Tommy walks out the front door in a hurry. Hawthorne then turns to Eva and says, "My good buddy Tommy is always in a hurry and always has another place to be. But he's a good man, and if you need anything, you can text him directly."
"Sounds good," Eva replies. "I'm going to review my interview questions this evening and prepare for tomorrow. Hope that's okay. Lilia and I will make sure the girls are in by curfew. See you tomorrow."
All right, have a good night. Hawthorne replies as he thinks to himself, yep, curfew. I haven't heard that word in a very long time, and I guess I better do the same and make sure the boys are in as well.
The following morning, and while Professor Hawthorne delivers several lectures in one of the large lecture halls on campus, Ava is busy prepping for her interviews in a side room in the same building. She asks one of the El Dorado College students, Olivia, who came along on the trip, to assist her with some of the audio recording equipment. Ava plans on not only writing several articles for print and online publications, but she also wants to capture video and audio recordings of the interviews. She's been granted the rights by the university to publish the video and audio of the interviews online and through different news agencies that are interested. In the meantime, Lily and other college students are sitting in on Hawthorne's lectures. Professor Hawthorne invites the students to join him on stage and contribute toward the end of each lecture as he gives an update about the school back in Coloma, California. Several students share from their own experience how they're enjoying their classes, college life, and the school in general.
Miranda Martinez walks into the small room, smiles, and sits down across from Ava and Olivia. She notices that Olivia is still fumbling around with some of the recording equipment, so Miranda sits down and says hello first. Hello, I'm Miranda, and I assume you're Ava?
Oh, hey, Miranda. Ava responds quickly. She continues, so sorry about the delay on our end. Some of the settings on our equipment were bumped out of whack on the trip down here. Anyway, I think we have it sorted out now. By the way, this is Olivia. She's a student at El Dorado College and is helping record these interviews. And I'm Ava.
All right. Hi, Olivia. Very nice to meet you, Miranda responds.
Hello. Nice to meet you, too. Sorry again for the delay. Olivia responds as she makes one last adjustment to the microphone.
Miranda, thanks for doing this interview with me. I guess in the world of archaeology and history, your find is a big deal, Ava continues. And that's what I want this interview to be about. How and where you found the artifact and some of the history behind it, and maybe what's next for you personally. I want to make this story more personal, kind of like telling the story about the people who do this for a living as well. So, as you are telling me these things, I may interrupt with clarifying questions just so I can get the facts straight. Hope that's okay.
Yeah, it's no problem, Miranda says. I just hope I don't sound too boring. Miranda smiles as she says that last part and then starts explaining to Ava the story behind the artifact, why it's such a big deal, and how she and her team were able to discover and recover it. Miranda continues with impeccable English. So, the rare vessel we found is made of pure jade, and we discovered it near the ancient sites of Calakmul, which is close to the border of Guatemala and Belize. The artifact dates back to the late 3rd century AD. Scientists found residue of chocolate on the inside, and the hieroglyphics state that it was used for chocolate. The vessel has a unique screw-top cap and is one of a kind. Cacao, the thing that makes chocolate, did not grow in many places in Mesoamerica at that time. Chocolate was very rare. It was expensive and was served only to elites and kings back then. Gosh, I hope I'm not boring you.
Ava responds quickly. No, no, this is fascinating. Please keep going.
Miranda continues, evidence suggests that this was a king's personal possession. In fact, we think this belonged to the most famous Mayan king known as Pakal the Great. Even though it was not found in the area of Palenque where he ruled, there are several markings on it that point to him personally. Pakal the Great is famous for many things, but most importantly, he transformed the city of Palenque into a successful and influential city that rivaled other cities, such as Tikal. It's believed that Pakal the Great helped restore divine order to the city and its residents after it had been partially destroyed by the Khan peoples from Calakmul. That's the location where we actually found the artifact. Anyways, I just happened to be in the right place at the right time and with the right team.
So why is this discovery so significant? Ava asks.
Miranda answers, I'm not an expert in ancient Mayan artifacts, but two college professors, a resident historian, several politicians, and Mr. Garcia, the museum's top curator, all seem to think this find may lead to other discoveries in that area. This artifact has great cultural and historical significance, especially for the indigenous people who still live in and around the discovery site. The Yucatan Peninsula has one of the largest concentrations of indigenous people in Mexico, and while they hold a lot of power and say both politically and economically, The protected villages near the site have already petitioned the Mexican government for the artifact to be kept locally in their own possession. And out of the museum here in Mexico City, some 1,000 kilometers away from their sacred sites. I guess they believe it contains some of the power and wisdom of Pakal the Great. For me, well, I just think that's a great significant historical artifact with deep cultural meaning. It's pure jade with a screw top lid. The meticulous engineering of the vessel shows off a level of craftsmanship not seen before this time period. It also proves that cacao was being traded at that time, which our history books do not mention. And lastly, it's worth a lot of money. Miranda pauses for a moment and then says, I want my next comments to be off the record, if that's okay?
Sure, okay, that's fine. Ava responds with a puzzled look on her face, turns to Olivia, and then asks Olivia to turn the camera and microphone off. Please continue, Ava says.
Miranda then continues. Thank you. Okay, off the record, and I'm only telling you this right now because you're not from around here and I trust you as a journalist. Well, I think this information should get out at some point. I just don't want my name attached to it. Miranda hesitates again and then says, the discovery of this artifact and its location could jeopardize a very significant new trade agreement between Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, and a large oil company out of Venezuela. Also, there are known cartel groups that operate in and around the discovery area. This entire region is quite remote and can be dangerous. Miranda stops abruptly and then finishes with one last statement. That's all. Just keep that last part out of your story. Thank you.
Olivia interrupts quietly. Are we done then? Do you want me to turn the camera and microphone back on now?
No, that's okay, Ava responds. I'm good with what I have. Then looking at Miranda, Ava continues, and we will respect your wishes to keep that last part off the record and out of the story. Thank you for sharing and for your time. After watching Miranda leave the interview room, Ava and Olivia prepare to interview Mr. David Silva, the diver who helped recover the other artifact they were told about. Mr. Silva is running a few minutes late. Ava's instincts tell her that there is a larger story here, especially after hearing what Miranda said off the record. Ava looks at Olivia and says, please don't talk to other students about what Miranda was saying off the record. We need to keep that confidential. But I will need to brief Professor Hawthorne. I may need to stay down here for a little bit longer than expected.
Olivia responds, yeah, I won't. I'm not sure what all that means, but it sounds like there are conflicting interest groups involved in whatever this is, and I'm happy to stay out of it. I'm just a broke college student on a class trip paid for by the university.
Ava laughs slightly. And that you are, Olivia. I was there once as well. At that moment, David Silva walks into the room.
Good morning, ma'am. I mean, ma'ams. David says as he turns his head and looks at both Ava and Olivia.
Good morning, Mr. Silva, and thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview with me, Ava responds.
Please, you may call me David. Mr. Silva sounds too formal for this setting. And no problem about the interview. If you don't mind, I'd like to keep my last name out of your report or story.
Should I start recording? Olivia asks Ava.
Yes, go ahead, Ava responds to Olivia. Ava then starts the interview. So, David, could you give us a little bit of the background about how you found the mask artifact and then what it means to the greater historical community here in Mexico?
David responds, well, I'm not a historian and I don't feel like I can speculate about the historical significance of the artifact. However, its location was particularly difficult to reach in order to retrieve it. I found it at the bottom of a small and very deep cenote. It was covered in mud and other debris. From my understanding, it's a one-of-a-kind and it's made of gold. It was quite heavy once I got it up and out of the water. It will be shown at the Ga at the museum tomorrow night.
Ava asks another question. Are there any details about the artifact, the mask, that you know and could share with me?
David answers, well, people are already calling it the Golden Mask of Chichen Itza. And from my limited understanding, it seems to be attracting a lot of attention, much like the jade jar Miranda and her team found earlier this year as well. Because the mask changes some of the theories about how the Mayan must have been trading with other people back in the day, mainly because gold is not something that is found in this region.
Go on, Ava responds.
David continues, one of the other guys on our team, I believe he was from the university, said that the mask proves that the Mayans were most likely trading with other people back then, such as the Aztecs or the people living on the Caribbean islands. If this is true, says this guy, then there will probably be more teams sent to search for more artifacts.
So where is the cenote located? Ava asks with a smile, knowing that David is probably not at liberty to say.
David smiles back and then says, "Well, that's the $50 million question. And I, along with the other team members, and there's only four of us to be exact, have been asked to keep the exact location confidential. I mean, can you imagine if the location was made public? Every amateur pirate and wannabe treasure hunter would be there right now." David sat back in his chair with a straight face when he said this. He then continued, "I've seen this firsthand in my military career and now in the private sector. People do some crazy and wild stuff over money and power."
Ava shakes her head and says, "Yep, I know exactly what you mean." "Before we end this interview, I've got one more question. I heard you say Miranda's name. How do you know her? I'm just curious. I mean, what are the odds that two significant historical artifacts worth millions were found in the same year?"
David tries to hold back a smile and then says, "I think it's just a coincidence that these two artifacts were discovered around the same time. Or maybe it's just fate. Either way, I don't really think much about it. I got paid to do the job, a job that no other diver south of Louisiana could have done. And I did it." Now, as far as knowing Miranda, as you have probably noticed, these two finds have brought a lot of press and have piqued the attention of a lot of powerful people here in Mexico and abroad. Anyway, Miranda and I have been in many formal and informal meetings together over the last few months, mostly with governmental agencies, politicians, and reporters. So you could say we feel like we're on the same boat together. No pun intended, by the way.
After a few more minutes and some goodbye pleasantries, David leaves the interview room. Ava looks over at Olivia and says the thing they both are thinking about. "Did you see the smile he had when I asked him about Miranda?" Ava notices Olivia nodding her head and continues, "There may be an undiscovered love story unfolding here. I mean, I'm not here to write a story about their personal lives, but if fate pushed them both into discovering these two rare artifacts, maybe fate also pushed them together. Now that would be an interesting side story." And with that, Ava and Olivia pack up their equipment and head off to meet up with Professor Hawthorne and the other students for the book signing event in the Student Center.
The UNOM Student Center is a large open space that expands both inside and outside the main building. There are actually four student centers on the main UNOM campus, and the one the book signing event is happening in is the largest of the four. Professor Hawthorne, along with Ava and Lily, sit front and center behind the main table, which is located on an elevated platform near one of the main sitting areas. There was an announcement made in both Spanish and English, informing the people in the student center that they were welcome to come to the table, welcome the guests, ask questions, and buy a book and get it signed. Several vertical upright banners flank the tables. The tables hold several stacks of books that are ready to be signed. The graphics on the banners include an image of the cover of the book and other clipartish looking graphics of gold and old gold miners. The book chronicles the true story that Hawthorne, Ava, Lily, Sierra, and Ethan experienced firsthand several years prior, a story that seems to be fading in their personal memories with each passing year. However, the book itself, titled The Secrets of El Dorado, is still selling quite well for the publisher and had even made the New York Times bestseller list at one point. It's now gaining popularity outside the U.S. market as it gets translated to other languages like Spanish. While the El Dorado College students mingle around the UNOM Student Center, which, by the way, is four times the size of the El Dorado College's Student Center, Hawthorne, Lily, and Ava interact with the number of interested students who have swarmed the table with curiosity, questions, and general interest in their story.
Anthony Garcia, a hurried and busy man, squeezes his way through the crowd of students and emerges right in front of Hawthorne and the girls. "Hello, you must be the famous James Hawthorne, and if my memory is correct, you are Ava and Lily," Anthony Garcia says as he approaches the table. He continues, "I recognize you from your photos in the back of the book. Let me introduce myself, as we'll be seeing each other tomorrow night as well." Anthony continues talking as Hawthorne, Ava, and Lily stand up and shake hands with him. "I'm Anthony Garcia, the lead curator from the museum. I was glad to hear you plan on coming to the gala at the museum tomorrow night. And Professor Tommy, a mutual friend, told me that he had invited your group. We made some special arrangements to secure extra tickets for your group. I wanted to let you know not to be alarmed when you see the price of each of the tickets on the printed paper. We've secured complimentary tickets for you and your group free of charge. The gala is also a fundraising event, so the ticket prices to attend reflect that. I just want to let you know It's a black tie event, and when you arrive, please provide the doorman with this letter and these tickets. I won't have another chance to see you before the event, so I wanted to come meet you in person and hand deliver these to you today. And to be honest, I like meeting famous people that aren't actors. Anyways, would you mind signing my two copies of your book? I bought these when they were first published over a year ago.
Professor Hawthorne responds with a grin and a look of gratitude. Nice to meet you, Anthony, and thank you for the complimentary tickets. I was wondering how our group was going to get into the event at the museum, but had forgotten to ask about that detail in all of our haste in planning and travel. So thank you for putting my mind at ease. And yes, we'd love to sign the books you have, and by the looks of them, they have been well-loved over the last year.
Anthony replies, yes, I passed these copies around to several of my close friends and finally got them back. You know the type of friends who like to borrow all your stuff so they don't actually own anything of their own. Anthony says the last part with a slight smirk on his face as he watches the trio sign his well-worn and read books. Alright, I gotta run, and thanks for signing the books for me. I'll see you tomorrow evening.
Abo jumps in with a last-second request as Anthony is turning around to walk off. I'd love to ask you some questions and get your personal perspective on both the artifacts tomorrow evening, if we get the chance. Ava watches as Anthony turns around and mouths the word, sure thing, as he slips back into the crowd of students who are all standing by the tables and awaiting their turn to meet these famous non-actor people from the United States, and maybe buy a book.
And that ends part two. Stay tuned for next week as we bring part three in our continuing story called Legends of the Yucatan.
As we end this episode, let's not forget that financial literacy is an important part of our life. Just like we learn to read, learn to do math problems, or learn how to ride a bike, learning about money and its proper function is essential to your future stability and understanding of how to manage it. All right, stay tuned for our next episode as we bring more relevant and informative content, not to mention part three of our adventure story. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives, sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.